Welcome to the Over 40 Alpha Podcast with your host, Funk Roberts. Funk has co-authored the best-selling book, Rapid Body Makeover. He is a master metabolic trainer, has been interviewed as a fitness expert on NBC, ABC, and CBS affiliates, and has a dedicated following of over 1.5 million people worldwide. With this podcast, Funk is dedicated to helping men in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond to regain their manhood and reach their highest potential through fitness, health, nutrition, mindset, and becoming over 40 alpha men. Join me in welcoming your host, Funk Roberts.
We are live, we are live, we are live, people. And welcome to the Over 40 Alpha Podcast. This is episode number 49. And for those of you who don't know, my name is Funk Roberts. I'm a former professional athlete turned master metabolic trainer, certified MMA strength and conditioning coach. And I'm known all over the world as a person who helps men in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond get in the best shape of their lives, completely transform their bodies and lives using nutrition, using workouts specifically designed for men over 40, using mindset strategies, recovery strategies, and of course, all of the tips and strategies to help boost testosterone naturally. And this is what this podcast is about. And today I'm super excited because we have our guest today is Michael Chernow. This is a good one, man. This is great because I also, you know, I like to have people on who can teach us a lot of things. I like to have people on who can educate. I like to have people on who are going through, you know, amazing journeys in their life. And Michael's one of them. I mean, Michael's a chef. He's an entrepreneur. He's the founder of Seymour's. He's a co-founder of the Meatball Shop in New York, which you guys will find if you are in New York. You definitely need to head out to the meatball shop. I know next time we go to New York, we're going to go there. He's also a co-founder of a company called Well, but I mean, he's like the modern day Renaissance man. You know, he's a restaurateur. He's been on TV. He's a fitness personality. He's a TV host. He's now into bodybuilding. He's a Muay Thai fighter and trained in Muay Thai. And I really enjoyed having him on this podcast. And I really think that for those of you who, you know, are when you listen to his story and listen to his struggles, a lot of us can relate to some of the struggles, but also listen to the and hear his successes and know that, you know, his mantra is fail often, fail fast, learn from your mistakes, you know. And that's what we're doing on any of the journeys that we're doing. If you're not afraid to fail often, if you're not afraid to fail fast, which means not trying to wait for that perfect moment to do something, and if you are one of those people who learn from your mistakes, you don't try to do the same mistakes over and over again, you don't make those same mistakes, you learn from them, you take what you need from that mistake, you discard everything else and continue, then you know, that's exactly what Michael's life has been and continues to be as he's moving into his 40s and is now, you know, going to be doing bodybuilding competitions at the age of 40, after being a long distance runner and running marathons, after training in Muay Thai. And again, his story from when he was young and how Muay Thai saved his life and his journey are great. So I'm not going to ruin it all for you. I'm going to let you listen to Michael. He's an amazing man. And I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Michael Chernow. What's up, everyone? It's the Funkster here. And I'm excited today to have a true Renaissance man. You know, like when I look down his fact sheet, so many things, man. You know, restaurateur, fitness personality, TV host, family man. You do a ton of other stuff. Fought Muay Thai, and you know, we are losing our a lot of Renaissance men. You know, as we're getting old, it seems like there's not enough Renaissance men who are coming up and doing things not only for themselves and in health, but for the people in the community and people around us. It's just, it seems that people are just getting stuck and comfortable being, you know, in their little comfort zone. But it's amazing to have Michael Chernow on the podcast today. Michael, how you doing, brother?
I'm really well, man. How are you?
I'm great. Really great to have you on. And I think, you know, my men are over 40 alphas are going to enjoy, you know, your story, which You know, where do we start? Where are you from and how did you, you know, become a chef and entrepreneur and start the whole journey? Let's start from when you were younger.
Sure. Well, I'm born and raised in New York City, Manhattan. And I come from a, you know, I didn't have the easiest upbringing. My household was very close quarters, and my dad was a bit of a difficult guy. He was a rough guy to have around. And so from early on, as early as I can remember, I always sort of wanted to make my way. I wanted to stay out. I didn't want to have many rules. I've had this sort of entrepreneurial way of myself as early as I can remember. I mean, if there was toys that I didn't want, I asked my older sister to come downstairs in front of my building with me and sell my toys. And wow. I was walking dogs all over the neighborhood by the time I was 10, 11 years old. And anyway, it got a little hectic in my household. So I left my parents' house when I was 15. And I had already gotten my first job in a restaurant when I was 13. And I knew that I was going to sort of figure out a way to make and do as I got older. And so I always had a job in a restaurant. The thing that I loved about restaurants was the ability to connect with human beings at scale. And I think ultimately that is my true passion in life, is to connect with human beings and to make people happy, to be of service. And obviously working in a restaurant is the best place to sort of bring that dream or bring that passion to fruition. And so, you know, I ended up, I was walking down a pretty rocky road all throughout my teens. And, you know, I hanging out with the wrong people and doing the wrong things. Until I finally snapped out of it when I was 23 years old, and I was working in a restaurant. My boss essentially took me aside and said, "Mikey, I love you. You have so much to offer, but you're killing yourself, and I can't watch it happen under my watch. So I'm going to have to let you go." And I, at that point in my life, you know, I didn't go to college. I went to college for a year and a half. I realized it wasn't for me. But in that point in my life, really, my job was everything. I really loved that place. And so I begged for my job. And he gave me an ultimatum. He said, "You can come into the restaurant. You can clean the restaurant with the porters for a month for 30 days at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll pay you minimum wage. You can call me when you get here. If you're a minute late, you're fired. And if you don't get sober, you've got no shot." Mm-hmm. And so I listened to him, and thank God for that. You know, I got my shit together, and right after I'd made that decision, I met two guys who I'd kind of known, but I didn't really know. A friend of mine had introduced me to these two dudes who were Muay Thai guys. And they knew that I had a pretty rocky, rough, you know, beginning, and they dragged my ass over to the Muay Thai gym and threw me in the ring. And they said, listen, this is what you're going to do. I was 23. They said, "You're going to wake up in the morning. You're going to have breakfast. You are going to come straight to the gym, and you're going to train."
Yeah.
And I looked up to these guys. They're 10 years older than me. Just badass dudes. And they got me sort of sorted on my path to fitness, wellness, and better living. And I fell in love with Muay Thai. I truly replaced all of the bad news with Muay Thai. And that's where I learned, I gotta say, I think that that's where I learned everything. I'm grateful that I have for today. You know, getting your ass kicked is, you know, it's not, you know, I have nothing against any other combat sport, boxing, you know, jujitsu, I love it all. But Muay Thai is a very unique sport, because I believe that it's there's an elegance, and there's like a spiritual tradition with Muay Thai that you don't necessarily get with other sports. Yeah. And there's also, you know, you get your ass, you really get your ass kicked. I mean, that's just that comes with the sport. Yeah. You know, it's a brutal combat sport. And so, you know, for the first long time, If you want to get good, you've got to go head to head with the guys that are good. Mm-hmm. And I sort of had this, I didn't even know I had it, but I had this crazy desire to fight. And I knew that, I mean, I had unfortunately gotten into a number of scuffs on the street, yeah. But I just didn't know that and when I say fight, I mean, actually like, I just wanted to be better. And in a sport like that, you have to fight to be better. And so every time I got knocked down, I got right back up. And they, you know, I was always also one of the smaller guys in the gym. So, you know, clinching, just was so hard for me. It was so hard, you know, but I just kept on getting better and better. And I went to Thailand and I trained really hard there. And I just truly just fell in love with it. And it taught me discipline. It taught me respect. It taught me humility. It taught me not only confidence in myself, but really being able to be cool under pressure. It taught me so many things. And so I owe it to Muay Thai. But as Muay Thai became a part of my life, entrepreneurialism really started to become a real thing for me. And I went to culinary school, graduated culinary school, and then I put a plan in place that I, you know, once another thing that I learned about Muay Thai is that like once you say something out loud, you got to do it, and if you don't do it, you're gonna learn the hard way, mm-hmm. Internally and externally. And so I said that I was gonna open up a restaurant. I said I was gonna go to culinary school, do a business plan, open up a restaurant. And that's exactly what I did. I went to culinary school, graduated, wrote a business plan, you know, it convinced my business partner, who was my best friend from childhood, to come back from California to open up this restaurant with me. We opened up a restaurant called The Meatball Shop in February 9th, 2010, right out of the recession. And it was a home run. Yeah, it was a home run.
Yeah. So you've discussed a lot. This is great. This was a nice journey so far. I know we're going to continue through, but I want to go back and touch on a few things because, you know, a lot of people, you know, first of all, you said you were working the restaurants at 13, 15. What were you doing then? And how did you get into that? Like, how were you working in restaurants at 13 and 15 years old?
Sure. So, you know, times have changed, obviously.
Yes.
I was delivering videos for a video store. This is back when VHS was like a thing in 1993. And I was delivering videos for a video store called Couch Potato Video, which was right down the street from this restaurant on 76th Street and 3rd Avenue. That my friend, who was a year and a half older than me, he was 15. You can get your working papers at 15.
Right.
And so he was answering the phones in the delivery department there. And he said, hey, you know, you're delivering videos down the street. Why don't you come and deliver food for us too? And I was like, sure. So I became a delivery boy at that restaurant.
Okay.
You know, obviously illegally, but, you know,
you're making money, man. You're working hard.
I was making. And so, you know, as soon as I got in there, one other thing that I feel like I have, you know, inherently is charm. I know how to communicate with people. That is right. Really well. Totally. And so I worked my way into a prep cook there and a busboy. And that's how I got my start in the restaurant. Wow.
That's amazing. Yeah. Cause you know, again, being that young, but I mean, you talked about it before, you know, selling your toys out front, really having that entrepreneurial spirit. Specifically what was going on at home, you probably want to be outside of the house more than you want to be inside of the house. And then when you left, you know, again, at an early age, man, it's just kind of like survival of, you know, how can you survive on a daily basis? And I think, you know, working in a restaurant was great. And then, you know, you talked about going down that slippers. How old are you right now?
39.
Yeah. So going down that slippery slope. I've been down that slope as well. I'm 51, so I was down that slope a little bit, you know, when I was in my latter years. But, you know, I love how Muay Thai got you out of that, you know, like just because, like you said, Muay Thai is a combat sport that's not just getting in the gym and, you know, training. It's spiritual. It's cultural. It's, You know, it can be a beautiful sport when you can see real Muay Thai fighters using all eight limbs. And you have to work hard. Like, there's no other conditioning like Muay Thai conditioning. I tell all, you know, people who say to me, hey, Funk, you know, I wanna go to Muay Thai class. How do I prepare? I go, you know how you prepare? Go to class. There's nothing you can do. You can run, you can do all that stuff. There's just nothing the same as Muay Thai, you know, Muay Thai conditioning. Did you feel that? Like, did you feel that when you were there?
I feel, you know, it sounds like you have a similar sort of mentality. I mean, I don't do anything half-assed. And that was the one sport that you just like even in jiu-jitsu, which is another beautiful sport, like in jiu-jitsu, you know, you could just tap, you know what I mean? If somebody's got you in a position that you're not comfortable in, like, you just tap and you're good. In Muay Thai, you know, it's basically, you know, 3-minute rounds of nonstop, you know, even when you're not throwing a punch or getting punched or kicked, you're still nonstop moving. So it's nonstop moving. It's nonstop sort of like, and it's also like, it's a mind game. You know, it really teaches you to like have insane self-awareness. And also, like, as an athlete, I think in general, we're hyper aware of everything in our periphery. Mm-hmm. But in Muay Thai, what I've learned is that, like, traditionally, you know, people think that you're looking at someone's hands or you're looking at someone's legs. But in actuality, in Muay Thai, you look at the shoulders and you look at the hips. Mm-hmm. Because that is going to tell you if somebody's getting ready to throw a punch or somebody's getting ready to throw a kick. And because the legs, you could totally get, you know, you know, there's lots of faking going on. So it just teaches you how to use your mind in ways that you wouldn't think. And so that is also exhausting, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Now, you went to Thailand. Let's talk about that. Was that the first place you, like, so you lived in New York. Is that the first time you left New York was to go to Thailand, or had you gone to places before? And then where did you go in Thailand and where'd you train?
Yeah, so that it wasn't the first time I had left New York. I've been to Europe once before. That was the only other time I've left the country. I was in Europe with a friend, like, on a blackout.
Like, how did I get here?
Exactly. But when I went to Thailand, I first went to Bangkok and I trained at a gym called Jitsi. It was a pretty hardcore fight camp in Bangkok. And I trained there for 4 weeks. And then I went out to Koh Phangan. And I trained at a more relaxing camp called Horizon Muay Thai for 4 weeks. And I learned so much while I was there. If anybody is doing Muay Thai, you know, and you have the ability to get out to Thailand to train, it's a completely different way of training the sport. I mean, at my gym, because, you know, we were constantly, you know, sparring pretty much, you know, at the level that I was at, it was, you know, there was a lot of tech sparring, but predominantly, like, it was like sparring. And right. In my gym, sparring was fighting, you know. Yeah. And when you go to Thailand, you know, they don't wear shin guards, they don't wear headgear. You know, they're typically wearing 10 ounce gloves.
Yeah.
And if you try to go hard there,
oh, it's over.
They'll tell you to leave, you know, because they're like, this is fun. They're like, we're playing. This is fun. We're learning here. We're not trying to hurt each other. We fight for a living. You know what I mean? We save our injuries for the actual money paying fights. We're not here to hurt each other. And it taught me a lot being there, because, you know, it's a sport, but for them, it's how they make their
life. Yeah. And when you were there, did you sample? Obviously, you ate the food, but did the Thai experience have any, you know, did it wash, you know, rub off on you? Where, you know, you bring it back and you're like, yeah, you know, like, that food is great. Maybe I can fuse it into some of the stuff that, you know, I have now. Did you ever have that going on?
You know, I mean, the food while I was there. So when I I didn't have a lot of money then. When I stayed with JT, I stayed at the camp. There was like four people that were actually living at the camp with me, family. And so I just ate whatever they cooked. And it was lots of vegetables, lots and lots of vegetables. And frogs,
Amir.
So I didn't really get the real experience in Bangkok. However, when I went to, when I would go off and travel on my own, I would have the street food and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When I went to Horizon, that's where I really experienced Thai food I probably haven't had Thai. I've never had Thai food that like that before. And right. I don't think I've had Thai food like that after. I don't think that Thai food is represented really well in the States compared to what is there. But, you know, every single night over at Horizon, I would get a whole fish and like a massive, huge plate of just, you know, local vegetables that were like pretty much like steamed, or they cooked it with coconut milk. It was the most unbelievable food I've ever had.
I know. It's incredible. It's incredible.
And it was like $3.
Yes. What year was it that you went? You must have gone.
I went in 07.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's when it was really cheap. Now we go every year. We've been there every year for the last 10 years. And, you know, we've seen the progression of, you know, we go to Bangkok at first at 13 coins, but then, you know, when I first went, I went to Tiger Muay Thai, which was when I first went there, it was literally the only gym on the street. So it was traditional, you know, get up, 5K run, come back, skip, do, you know, stretch, technique, bag work, you know, tech sparring, depending on what it was. And all the fighters from all over the world would come there, like MMA fighters, because they wanted to train their stand-up. But for me, it was just Muay Thai. And then, you know, as the years went on, specifically on that one street that has Tiger Muay Thai and Phuket Top Team, you could see the evolution of like more gyms, more restaurants, more like everything was, you know, more people coming. And, you know, the pricing obviously, you know, continued to rise because, you know, your dollar back in 2009 can stretch way longer now than your dollar there, but it's still very cheap. It's still very incredible.
When I was there, I'm not exaggerating when I'm telling you, I was there for 2 months. The first month, all in with everything, room and board, food, training, everything, I spent $900.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
And the training was like, because obviously, as you know, Bangkok is so hot and dense, the air is so thick, that we would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and we would go on like, you know, an hour long, hour and a half long run.
Yeah.
Then we would go back to the gym, we'd skip for a half an hour. Then we do, you know, you just go round after round after round after round.
Sure.
Stay in three or four rounds. And then somebody would swap in with you and you do that for an hour. And then, you know, you do either knee sparring or leg sparring, and then you eat and then you sleep.
Yeah.
And then you
repeat.
And train again for 3 hours.
Yeah, man.
So, I mean, I think when I left Thailand, and luckily my wife was actually working in Japan at the time. And so I left Thailand and went to Japan for a week. And, you know, I think I was like 135 pounds when I left Thailand. And I put on a good 10 pounds in Japan that week. But yeah, man, Thailand was the bomb. I would love to go back there.
Oh, you have to go back, Michael. You have to go back, man. It's changed, but it's still the same. Same, same, but different, you know. Same, same, but different. Okay, so then let's go to, you know, so you get back from Thailand, you really, you know, jump into the entrepreneurship. Well, you go to school and you become, you know, you open up the meatball shop, which is what is the meatball shop? It's still open today, right? It's still there today.
Yeah. There's five of them in the city.
Amazing.
And, it's basically it's just a fun restaurant. You know, for years I worked at this Italian restaurant that had this amazing dish called the rigatoni ragu, rigatoni pasta, meatballs and sausage, super simple. The menu was extensive, but that was the one dish that was just like every time it was on the table, whether people were just sharing it or it was their entree. Anyway, for my meal at night, I would order a bowl of the meatballs and sausage and tomato sauce, sans the rigatoni.
Right.
And a side of broccoli and a side of spinach. And that's how I ate for years, you know, after I got my act together. And so when I was thinking about a concept, you know, of what to do, everybody loves meatballs. the beauty of the meatball shop is that, you know, when people think of the meatball shop, they think of like, oh, just indulgent, heavy, you know, fattening food. Yeah. However, the cool thing about the meatball shop is, yes, you can absolutely do that and swing for the bleachers every time, or you can order a bowl of meatballs and sauce with sides of veggies. And so that's what I really wanted to do with the meatball shop. I wanted to be able to give our guests the option to separate their protein, their starch, and their veg without having to like make the chef, you know, do special things for them.
Right.
Because I eat so clean, you know, when I go to a restaurant, most of the time, even though I'm a restaurateur, like most of the time I'm a pain in the ass. I'm like, hey, can I have this? But I don't want that. And so at the meatball shop, I wanted to give complete customizability to the guest, but also have a really good time, you know, at the same time. So opened up this place, the meatball shop. It's a bunch of different kinds of meatballs, a bunch of different sauces, a bunch of sides. And you can have your meatballs pretty much any way your heart desires, on a hero, on a burger bun, over pasta, over vegetables, over polenta. There's just so many different options there. And so it really worked. People loved the idea of the customizability, and obviously people love meatballs. And so we opened up, and we paid our investors back in 6 months. We raised a bunch of money to open up five more. We opened up five more. About 4 years into that, I really wanted to get creative again. I love the creative element of business. And so I stepped down from co-CEO, my partner. He took on the CEO title, and I went off to open up a new restaurant concept called Seymour's, which is a sustainable seafood concept. And I opened that one up in 2015, and now there's six of those.
Wow. And so 11 restaurants.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, it's scary right now because obviously in the middle of the pandemic and
right.
The industry got crushed.
Wow. So yeah, you're in New York, so what's going on there right now? Let's kind of flip it. We'll go back to you know, some other things that you've been doing, but let's kind of flip it to, you know, what's going on there now, and how you're surviving. Physically, you're surviving, obviously, but I mean, how are the shops surviving? What's happening? What's the, you know, one thing you talked about at the very beginning was that community, right? Like that you like to interact with people, bring people together, and you know, the pandemic is spreading everybody apart, you know, just because we have to stay apart. What's happening now with you and your places and just your mindset now? What's going on?
Yeah, well, you know, again, like, you know, I'm no longer the sort of at the helm of the day-to-day operations at either Meatball Shop or Seymour's, because typically what I do is I create the brands, I build the businesses, I generate value, establish the culture. And that takes about 3 to 4 years. And then I try to sell as much equity as I can so I can go out and create the next one.
Right.
And so I've done that both with Meatball Shop and Seymour's. For Seymour's, I sold my equity to my partner, the majority of my equity to my partner in November. However, I'm still on the board of both companies and advise for both companies.
Right.
And immediately when this thing set in, I got on a board call with both companies. And Meatball Shop, we decided that we were going to keep the restaurants open for takeout and delivery.
Right.
And that's worked out very, very well for us, even though it's nowhere near what we used to do. At least we didn't have to lay off the whole entire staff, but we did lay off close to 300 people at the Meatball Shop, which was terrible. But everybody will have their jobs back as soon as we can get back up and running.
Right.
Meatball Shop has been doing pretty good with takeout and delivery. Seymour's, however, is a seafood restaurant, and you know, we decided based on our delivery and takeout sales in normal life that it's not enough to warrant us to stay open through this pandemic, because we didn't believe that enough people are going to want fish for delivery.
Right.
And we decided to preserve as much cash as we had in the bank, close the restaurants, and try to weather the storm.
Right.
And, we did that for the first 2.5 months. And then about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, we started to open up the restaurants for lobster rolls and margaritas.
Okay.
And now we're slowly rolling out Seymour's. But Meatball Shop is open at all locations. We're serving food to people in the outdoor cafes.
Right.
Seymour's is now doing the same thing. So it's slowly coming back together. You know, we're lucky in New York, where New York is one of the better states right now.
Right.
The pandemic. However, who knows? You know, I mean, I think the pandemic is actually in a worse place now than it was when it first hit. So
I agree.
You know, we're just keeping our fingers crossed. We absolutely are social, you know, we social distance and you know, we empower everybody in New York City to walk around with face masks on.
Totally.
You know, it's a crazy time, man. But
Go ahead.
I think the business is going to be okay at the end of the day. I mean, we got lucky. We got PPP loans that we hope to be able to utilize. And I think it's going to be all right. I think it's just time will tell.
Time. Yeah, exactly. It's funny with the masks because, you know, for all the years you go to Thailand and you know, some other Asian countries, they're always wearing a mask. Specifically when I was in Thailand 10 years ago, people would be wearing masks. And, you know, at first you'd be like, why are they wearing a mask? Oh, it's just because they're sick or they must have a cold or something or whatever, you know. Like, okay, cool. And then it just becomes a normal thing. And then, you know, 10 years later, 11 years later, you come back here and it's like I'm from Canada. So it's a little bit, I'm here in Toronto. So people are a little bit more conscious of the other person. You know what I mean? Like, it's not as individual as maybe some of the states, like, I mean, I just see what's on social media. So I'm not on social media a lot, but you can see some people are just like, they have their rights. My First Amendment right. I shouldn't have to wear a mask. But, you know, it's more of a, it's not just about yourself. I think it's about everybody else around you and really nipping this thing, this pandemic in the bud, or at least, you know, weathering the storm until we have a vaccine. And you know, here in Canada, most people wear masks without any, you know, it's the younger people don't, but the older people do. But yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's such a normal thing in Asia and other countries. And then here it's such a battle for, you know, in some places it's literally a battle for someone to put on a mask. It's crazy. But I guess New York is starting to, well, from the get-go, you guys have been fighting this thing, right?
Well, New York was definitely ground zero for it.
Yeah.
Well, New York was really, really bad. I mean, like very, very bad.
Yeah.
And luckily my wife and my family and I, you know, I have a house about 2.5 hours north of New York City. So when this thing started to get really bad, we decided to pack our stuff and move to our house upstate.
Right.
And that's what we've done. I've actually moved, we've moved. So
right.
We're in Brooklyn. We're at the house upstate. I'm lucky because I have a garage gym up here that I just, like, you know, cherish every single day. And so between my garage gym, I turned, you know, our guest bedroom into my home office. And, you know, I'm doing my very best to stay in contact with everybody and help out in any way I can. And, you know, of course, the terrible issue and situation with the George Floyd murder, which just like absolutely unbelievably terrible, and how that has sort of brought people out of their homes again. You know, so it's a very, very unique time in history. Unprecedented time. And, you know, who knows what to expect? I mean, we the United States has, I mean, I never get political, but, you know, I got no choice. I mean, we have terrible leadership here. So
yeah, it's brutal at the moment. We're seeing it live every day, and we're just seeing it in what's going on. But on another note, you know, immunity is a big thing right now. You know, we've got to stay healthy. We've got to do what we can to stay healthy. And you know, luckily for you, you have a gym at home. What are some of the things you do at home? How important is fitness to you? You actually ran a marathon, a couple of marathons as well. So aside from Muay Thai, where you probably, the running in Muay Thai probably got you into the marathons. I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, you ran two marathons. You've been a bodybuilder in the past. So it's so weird too, because, like, you know, Muay Thai athlete, you know, usually you're lean and slim. Marathon, super lean, and, you know, just you're, it's one thing, it's running, and it's very, you know, one dimensional. But then bodybuilding is the opposite side. You know, it's like physique, and you have to, you know, bulk up. And so What was that transition like? Like, how did you go from bodybuilding to marathon, or marathon to bodybuilding, or how was that transition for you?
Well, you nailed it. You know, Muay Thai got me into running. As soon as I started Muay Thai, my crew basically said, you know, you smoked cigarettes for however long you smoked cigarettes. Thank God you don't smoke cigarettes anymore, but you got to start running, dude, if you want to have any conditioning in the yeah. ring. So I started running and I fell in love with running. Running really is like a moving meditation for me. And I don't do, I ran my last marathon in 2018. I was supposed to run in 2019, but I essentially tore my hamstring. I don't think I'm going to do much long distance running going forward. I love running and I have no problem doing a 3 to 5 mile run, but I think, and I hate to say this, but this is the 40 and over alpha podcast. Like as we get older, you know, that sort of pounding on the body is just not what it, I mean, I don't know if it's just that, like, I've done so much of it that my body is just taking too much, or if I'm actually getting older, you know, it's probably a combination.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, I choose not to do super long distance runs anymore, because the truth is that, like, my knees, my hips, it like fucks my whole body up. And so, I do, like, you know, 3 to 5 mile runs if I'm going to do a run. But so I trained Muay Thai for 10 years intensely. And then I wanted to do something different. And you know, in Muay Thai, it's all about conditioning, fast and lean. And you know, you don't lift weights. Like, maybe you swing a kettlebell a little bit, but like, it's all bodyweight calisthenics. So it's pull-ups, push-ups, dips, crunches, yeah. planks, stuff like that.
Calisthenics.
Yeah, calisthenics. And like, I was an animal, calisthenic animal, like, like insane. You know, I was doing like hundreds of pull-ups, thousands of push-ups, like crazy. So I decided about 10 to 10 and a half years in. Actually, what really happened was I was in fight camp and I was training with my coach, who is a badass. And he roundhoused me right across my fucking nose and exploded my nose. And my nose literally was like exploded. And so I had to get 3 reconstructive nose surgeries. And I said, you know what, man, like, I'm not going to do this professionally. I think this is my time to start picking up another sport. And so I got into the weights and I started moving the weights around, and I fell in love with moving the weights around. And, you know, I really changed gears. I just like, I still kick the pads and I hit the bag. But really, my passion today is in weight training and strength training.
Okay. And,
you know, I went from, like, you know, 140, walking around 142 to 145 pounds, to, you know, walking around 160 pounds. And I competed in a bodybuilding competition last April. I was in I competed in a bodybuilding competition, my first bodybuilding competition. Mm-hmm. Trained really hard to get there. Placed top 10, which was awesome for my first show. I was supposed to run the marathon in November of 2019. And so my show was done in April. So I said I was gonna, you know, finish my show. I was already down in super lean condition. I was just going to run the marathon, and that's when I got injured. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to stick to this bodybuilding thing, because I really love the bodybuilding thing. I love the challenge of it. It's one of the most focused, intense sports you could possibly do. Mm-hmm. I don't, Muay Thai is like, you go to the gym, you train, you get your ass kicked, you kick ass, and you go home, you know. In bodybuilding, it's like everything you put into your body, every single movement that you do, you know, everything is very, very, very technical in terms of like heart rate, you know, awareness and all that stuff. So I really sort of like have taken it to the next level with my fitness and the bodybuilding stuff. And I love the focus. And so that's what I do now. I wake up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I train fasted every morning for about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on the workout. My nutrition is dialed in.
I was going to say.
anybody like listening to this, I mean, you know, in my opinion, age doesn't really mean much. It's about how much you want something and how well you take care of your body. Like I'm going to be 40 in a few months and I feel like I'm going on 20, you know, yeah. When I'm in the gym with the young dudes, you know, I put it on all of them. Totally. You know, I believe that. Like I just like 22, come, let's go, you know, like what, you know, and so I think age is nothing but a number and you could do whatever you want to do. It's all about how badly you want it. And so I would, whatever I want, I take to the next level and I get it. And there's only one way to do that and it's to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. I think you're dialed in perfectly as you reach 40 because, you said it, you know, obviously the years of running and Muay Thai too is going to do a lot on your joints, a lot in your hips, a lot in your knees. And then, but also the age, you know, we don't recover like we used to. And a lot of the guys who are in the over 40 program or listening to this, they see it. It's like, oh, I'm getting, you know, my back's hurting, my knees hurting, my, you know, I'm waking up with my shoulders hurting or whatever it is. And a lot of people just think that it's supposed to be that way. Like, okay, well, I'm supposed to feel this way and I'm supposed to, you know, put on weight and I'm supposed to have the dad bod and the beer belly and all this shit. And one of the things that, you know, my mission is to let guys know you're not supposed to be that way. You just have to train differently. You have to eat differently. You just have to, you know, the margin for error is like here now. Whereas before when we could eat pizza and eat whatever we wanted back in the day and still get lean and, you know, party and do whatever and still be okay. Now it's like, okay, you can, you know, you've got to, you can be in incredible shape, the best shape of your life. I see it every day. With my program, the best shape of your life, but you just have to get your nutrition dialed and you got to, you know, just move, you know, 3 to 4 times a week, get a workout in. Other days, work on your recovery, your joint health, your yoga, mobility, ab and core, so you can get your core straight. Recovery is going to be key. Get the 7 to 9 hours sleep. Like all of those things, literally what you need to have been doing in order to become a, you know, to compete in bodybuilding. All of those things are going to be incredible as you age in 40s and, you know, your 50s and 60s and still be like top shape. Like I still, when I was training Muay Thai still, like at 51, I was still, you know, sparring with 20-year-olds, like loving it too. Like, okay, 20-year-old, let's do it, buddy, let's go. Let's, you know, like, I love it. But yeah, I think everything you said, just being focused on the foods, you can do anything you want, specifically when you're feeding your body the right stuff. That's what it boils down to with your nutrition. And is there a specific nutrition plan you do, or is it just, you know, healthy starchy carbs, fats, proteins, vegetables, or is there something more specific?
Well, I have a lot of sensitivities because I was diagnosed with Lyme disease and I probably ate for a long time. And so, you know, I think the Lyme disease really sort of impacted my microbiome. And so as I've gotten a little older, I have sensitivities. And so I try to stick to like a paleo program. Obviously with the bodybuilding stuff, you know, I track everything. I track all my macros and that's definitely a lifestyle that's not for everyone.
Yeah.
However, I would say that if being in the best shape and feeling your best is something that's interesting to you, you know, making the sacrifice and tracking your macros for a month and a half to 2 months to see what it does for you is something that I suggest to everyone, because it's one of those things where it's a pain in the ass, but like, if you really want to see results, the only way to see results is by knowing what you put into your body. I mean, totally. That is the truth. You could train as hard as you want. You could be the baddest guy in the gym, but if nutritionally you're not on point, you're not going to see what you want to see. I mean, I believe, and I really only learned this through the bodybuilding stuff.
Right.
90% of the challenge in getting to where you want to be or to where you feel like, holy smokes, I could really see a difference here, is nutrition. 90%. Mm-hmm. And, but I keep my stuff pretty simple. You know, like I eat for my carbohydrates, I really eat oats and sweet potatoes. That's what I eat.
Yeah.
And I get, you know, carbs through veg. For protein, I eat chicken breast. And one thing I would suggest to anybody out there that like, oh, chicken breast, you know, like we all know, you know, for fitness people, chicken breast is obviously the easiest lean protein to go to when it comes to real food. Mm. The best way to cook chicken breast, period, hands down, is to buy yourself a sous vide machine, which is sous vide, S-O-S-O-U-S-F-I-D-E.
Okay.
And basically what it is you take a pot of water, you take a pot, you fill it with water, you take this sous vide machine, which is this like electric cooker that you stick into the pot of water, and it gets the water to a specific temperature based on what you're trying to cook. And you could set the temperature and you set the time. You take your chicken breasts and you put them in these plastic bags with this like vacuum sealed plastic bag. It sounds a little more complicated than it is. Anyway, you season your chicken breast with salt and any seasonings you want, no fat. You just put the salt on it, a little squeeze of lemon, you know, paprika, whatever you want to put in there. You put it into this bag, you drop it into the water bath. It cooks for about an hour and a half. And it is the best chicken breast you've ever had in your entire life, hands down. Your voice is juicy. It is delicious. You can cook anything in a sous vide, but I cook my chicken at bulk. So I'll cook like 8 chicken breasts in there at the same time. And it's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
And so the majority
of watering.
Like, what was that?
My mouth's watering.
The majority of my meals are like, are you know, I'm a creature of habit. When I find something I like, I eat it. I never, ever sacrifice flavor. So everything I eat tastes good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's BS with, you know, if you eat healthy food, it's not going to taste good. Like,
totally. You
know, I cook for friends and family constantly. And if I'm eating it, that means it's healthy.
Right.
So I, you know, but I tend to, you know, lean beef, lean chicken, lean pork, lots and lots and lots and lots of vegetables, sweet potatoes. When I'm like in contest prep and I need a sort of faster, metabolizing carbohydrate, I'll have white rice, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
I'm eating a lot of sweet potatoes and, you know, I eat 5-6 times a day. And I'm about to walk into my contest prep in a week. I start training for an October 11th bodybuilding show. And
okay.
So it's a 2-month cut and, you know, it's a gradual cut. So I'll go from like 2,200 calories now. I'll go down to like over the course of the 3 months, you know, at the end, I'll be at like 1,400 calories.
Right. Yes.
And that's when I'm like pissed off and hungry. Totally. All the time, drinking like 3 gallons of water a day to kind of stay satiated.
Yeah.
And just can't wait until the competition so that I can, you know, come back to life. I think in my last competition, I was down to 2% body fat when I was on stage.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What said you're about 160 now? You went from 145 to like 160. And what would you compete at bodybuilding? What weight, how big or small are you going to be?
I'll be at like probably like 148.
Right.
Like, you know, 140, between 145 and 148, you know, depending on how intense we go. I mean, the hardest thing about bodybuilding, which is different than Muay Thai, where it's like, if you have to cut weight for Muay Thai, you just cut weight. You just cut. It's not about keeping muscle on or anything like that. You just cut. For bodybuilding, it's not about just cutting. It's about sustaining muscle and only losing fat.
That's right.
And so that's like very, there's like it's very technical on how you do that. So you keep your protein level super high, your fat content is very low, and your carbohydrates is just enough to have the glycogen in your muscles to get you through your workout. That's literally the only you just want enough carbohydrate to have the perfect amount of glycogen so that you can get through your workout. You're not trying to put on any size. You're just trying to keep your muscles active. Right. So it's really sort of like a very technical diet program, you know?
Yeah. My wife used to be a bodybuilder. So she, you know, I always said, I mean, I used to play professional volleyball and beach volleyball all over the world. So, you know, after my career was over, and even during my career, I was always like the bigger, you know, I'm 5'11", but I could jump, and I was always a bigger guy on the tour. And, you know, I always just say, you know, as soon as I finish volleyball, I'm going to be a bodybuilder 100%. But that just, Muay Thai took over then, and understanding how very difficult it is to be a bodybuilder. Like, it's a science, man. Like, my wife, when she used to bodybuild, man, it's a science, like, dialed down to, like, your workouts, the intensity of your workouts, the nutrition, the weighing of the food, just, like, it's unbelievable. And not just for, like, you know, when you train for a fight, they can do an 8-week fight camp. If you're a Muay Thai fighter, you're fighting every 2 weeks anyway, so you're always literally training and you're pretty much ready. You just have to put a sweatsuit on and go for a run to cut weight. But as a bodybuilder, the time to prepare is so long, and so you have to be so on point for that length of time, specifically if you want to do really well. There's no like, oh, I'm going to have this. Well, I mean, I remember, yeah, Angelisa, I have cheat days here and there, but yeah, it's like the amount of time that you have to be so dialed in to your nutrition and so focused and so committed and so diligent with everything is unbelievable, man. Like, that's just another feather into what you do and what you've done. It's tough. It's very difficult. So guys in my program, you know, it's kind of like the very first, when they first come in, most people just want to lose weight. You know, they want to get rid of belly fat. They don't realize it's all about testosterone. So I teach them that it's testosterone, but I also teach them that sarcopenia happens. You have a natural loss of muscle as you get older through aging, specifically if you don't use it, which 90% of the guys had not been doing it or had stopped doing. So building muscle is part of the program. You know, let's get fat loss and we're going to go to muscle building this month and we're going to go to this and this and this. But what happens is they get so focused on what they don't realize is when you're building muscle, you're not going to lose weight. You're going to, you know, specifically because we're trying to build muscle, we're trying to get stronger. So the 7 pounds you lost last month because you were on such a great fat loss program, you're not going to lose anything this month. In fact, you may gain a pound, you may what have you. And they freak out. Like, they're like, oh my God, Funk, I didn't lose anything. What's going on? Like, listen, this month is muscle building month. You're not going to lose weight. We're trying to stimulate muscle growth so that you don't have sarcopenia. And then don't worry, you'll lose that weight afterwards because it's a marathon. But it's funny. And then when they get to a point where, okay, Funk, you know, I've been doing this fat loss thing. I didn't really focus on the muscle when I was supposed to. Now I'm really skinny and I want to build muscle. Like, can you give me a 30-day program? I'm like, dude, it's not going to take you 30 days to build muscle. It's going to take you like a year. Like, if you want to get super jacked, put yourself in a muscle building program for a year. Like, we're going to slowly do it. But so anyways, I know I talked a lot there, but yeah, just the ability to build that muscle and you know, how long it takes. It's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, muscle building, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you can lose weight fast, yeah, but building muscle is also like a real science. You know what I mean? And it takes an enormous amount of tension on your muscles to actually get them to a point where, you know, you are breaking them down, protein synthesis is building them back up. You understand how glycogen plays a role in that. You understand that carbohydrates are actually not bad for you. They're actually really good for you. Like, if you are afraid of carbohydrates, like, carbohydrates are our necessity in our body, right? Unless you're on a ketogenic diet, which is not a diet that's going to help you grow any muscle. It's a diet that could potentially, you can blow out your fat stores, which is awesome to do. I love keto for like cognitive stuff, but in terms of like longevity, sustainability, like lifestyle, keto is not the thing. If you are afraid of carbohydrates, it's going to be really hard for you to get in great shape, because you need carbohydrates. And the only way carbohydrates are actually going to make you fat or overweight is if you eat a ton of carbohydrates and you don't move.
Exactly. Period,
right? Yeah. Like, you eat, like, right now I'm lean. I mean, I'm like, and I'm at the top of my sort of like lean bulk right now, because I've been eating a lot. But I'm still lean as hell, and I'm eating 210 grams of protein and 210 grams of carbohydrate every day. That's where my macros are at. Dietary fat is something that people need to pay attention to.
Oh boy.
I'm not saying dietary fat is bad for you, but if your goal is to lean out, You want to up your carbohydrates and drop your fat intake, because carbohydrates are going to give you the energy that you need. You don't want to be on no fat, but you certainly, you know, don't want to be on a high fat diet and have carbohydrates, because that's not, it just doesn't, it aesthetically, it's not going to get you where you want.
Yeah, for sure. So you have a drink company called Well. When did that come to into play?
Well was launched in 2016, right after I opened up Seymour's. I was introduced to the CEO of Well, and it wasn't Well at that point. It was a beverage that this dude, Sagan Schultz, who's a really smart guy, was just tinkering around with in his kitchen. He came to Seymour's. A friend of mine said, "You got to meet this kid. He's doing something really cool." He came to Seymour's, and he gave me this concoction of cold pressed watermelon, tart cherry, and lemon juice mixed together in a specific ratio. And I tasted it, and I was like, "Holy shit, that's delicious!" And he told me the properties, and you know, watermelon has the highest property of L-citrulline in a natural product. Tart cherry obviously has unbelievable anti-inflammatory properties. And then we use the sort of lemon and balance out the flavor with the acid. But between watermelon and tart cherry for muscle recovery, it's like a perfect combo.
Totally.
And so he told me that. You know, I'm a supplement guy. I don't like overdo it with supplements, but I certainly drink EAAs constantly and did then too. And when I learned that I can drink this product as a substitute for that, I said, "Wow, that's fantastic! It's all natural." So anyway, I introduced it to a business partner of mine who is like a supermarket guy, and we put it in a bottle. And sure enough, Whole Foods loved it, picked it up, and got really lucky. And Sagan Schultz is the CEO of the company. It's kicking ass right now. There's now 7 SKUs. We have 2 ready to drink plant-based protein drinks. That Recover, the original SKU is the Recover SKU. We have 2 hydrates, and then we have an adapted 2 adaptogen SKUs, one for before bed and one for the morning to give you a little kick in the butt.
Cool, man. This is great. Like, I'm just looking at it right now and sort of, you know, I'm looking at some of the properties specifically in the protein and the recovery, just because, again, for us guys, you know, men, as they get older, you know, you got to stay away from the estrogenic stuff like dairy and soy and, you know, sugar as well, and not, you know, GMO and all that stuff. And I really like the, sorry, I'm just looking at here. I really like the recovery. Like, you know, this is something like after a workout, these guys can throw down the recovery, or specifically people having problems sleeping, because again, sleep is one of our key pillars. Obviously you need 7 to 9 hours to have that, you know, to get your testosterone levels producing at the right levels, and of course recovery and muscle building and everything else. So this seems like it'd be really cool for sleep before dream.
For your demographic, I mean, for anyone, it's not only delicious, but it's really designed for people that are looking to live a better life. And it's simple, ready to drink beverages that are low calorie and have all the right ingredients in them. It's an awesome product, and I drink it every day. I love it, and I highly recommend people that are looking for a convenient way to get their nutrients. This is a good one.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'll definitely have a link to that page as well. So Michael, we're gonna wrap up. Man, your life has been great. We've learned a lot. What is one thing you can tell these guys? You know, these guys who are either just starting to get back into fitness, you know, guys who are kind of reluctant. They're still like, "Oh, I'm 40, I'm 45, I'm whatever. I don't think I can do it." Or guys who are just trucking right now and just like, you know, they're living the alpha life. You know, they've got the nutrition on point. They've got their workouts on point. What is something you can tell to all of them, leave some knowledge, some wisdom?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I say often is, I'll say a few things. One is, you know, you got to learn to love the hard and the hurt, because once you can love to learn and embrace the hard and the hurt, unstoppable will be your DNA. Nobody's afraid of the person who's not afraid, you know? Yeah, and so, if you can learn to love the pain, because it's absolutely necessary in every aspect of life. There's going to be hard, there's going to be hurt, there's going to be pain. If you can actually learn to embrace it, like literally once you're in it and it gets really hard, and then you can stop yourself, take a moment and say, you know what? I'm going to fucking love this. I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to make this okay. I'm not going to run from this. I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not going to make excuses around this. I'm going to learn to love it. If you can say that, when you're in it, be conscious and self-aware enough to say that when you're in it, it's game changing. That is truly the unstoppable man or woman. That is like, that is that thing right there. And then, you know, there's only one way to have something. You got to first want it, and then you got to do it. And want plus do equals have. That's the only way. There's no other way around it. That's what I've learned, that there's literally no other way to get something without doing it. So that is really important there. And then the last thing I would say is, like, humble yourself enough to ask for help, because asking for help is my greatest tool. I ask for help. It doesn't matter how good I am at something, how confident I'm in at something, I will always learn. I will always want to learn. And the more help you have, the better off you are. And so get out of your own way, push your ego to the side. Your ego is not your amigo, and ask for help.
I love it, man. I love it. That's I agree on all three levels, 100%, 100%. Man, now that's incredible. Thank you so much, Michael. How can we reach you? How can these guys reach you at any time?
You can follow me on all social media channels at Michael Chernow. I've got a great website with a bunch of stuff that I believe in, michaelchernow.com. My podcast, which is called Born or Made, is relatively new. We're about 18 episodes in, but it's good, and I got a bunch of good content coming out. So Born or Made, please, if you listen in there, I'd really appreciate it. That's something I'm trying to push out in a real way now.
All right, man, thanks so much. I really appreciate you being on the podcast, and keep crushing it, man. I'm gonna keep my eye on you, so I want to know how you're doing the bodybuilding. I want to know how well's doing. I want to know everything, so keep my eye on you, especially when you get to 40. My eye is on you.
I love it. Thanks.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
I do.
Hey, it's Funk Roberts here, and thank you so much for listening to this episode of my Over 40 Alpha podcast. Now, before you go, I've got a special gift that I want to give you, and one thing I need to ask you as a member of our podcast family. First, if you haven't already, please claim your free 30-day trial at over40alpha.com. This is a 30-day trial into our Over 40 fitness program that has workouts, nutrition, mindset training, recovery training, everything you need to help you lose weight, to help you burn belly fat, to help you increase your muscle, and of course, naturally increase your testosterone levels and get you into the best shape of your life. So please go to over40alpha.com and join the thousands of men in their 40s, 50s, 60s getting incredible results on a daily basis. And next, as a member of our Over 40 Alpha podcast family, please, if you know anyone, another guy in their 40s, 50s, 60s who can benefit from listening to this podcast, share it with them. And if you can, please leave a review. It really helps us with the podcast. Thank you so much again. Get it done, and I'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Over 40 Alpha podcast, hosted by Funk Roberts. Former professional athlete turned master, metabolic trainer, and best-selling author. Bringing you the best information to help you get into the best shape and health of your life in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Join us for another podcast.